This is an SJC Radio production.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Welcome to episode 9 of series 8 of Pit Stop, joined by the usual crew. We've got Joe, we've got Finn. Oh, we've also got Tom. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Joe, start off news. I think it was either today or yesterday about the new sprint format. So basically, Saturday is going to be given over to the sprint race. They got sprint qualifying and the sprint race on Saturday. There's a slight difference that, the difference being is that the sprint race has its own qualifying session. So you got two qualifying sessions.
There won't be a sprint race every race. It'll just be on selected races. Is that still the case?
Well, we seem to be in this trial phase. It seems to be the third year of trialing these sprint races. They've got to make a call whether they want them or not. If they want them, have them every race. If they don't, then bin the whole lot. Personally, I don't think the sprint races add anything to the Grand Prix weekend. You might have a different opinion to that.
A wise man once said on a podcast that less is more.
Yeah, I think that might be me, actually. I think
it was Max Davidson.
It could have been Max Davidson, who I was skiing with last week in Italy.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very nice, actually. Right. Going back to the weekend before last, the MotoGP from Qatar, that was a win for Alex Rins on the LCR Honda. In my many years of following motorsport, I think that might be the biggest surprise result that I've experienced. Because of all the races I've watched, I don't think that's probably the biggest surprise. If you had said to me on Friday, I think Alex Rins will win the MotoGP on Sunday, I would have said to you, you know nothing. There's no way Alex Rins on the worst bike, the Honda, and it's not even a factory Honda, it's a satellite Honda team. There's no way any rider is going to win a race on that bike. And he completely dominated the race. This was after, of course, Bagnaia fell off. He's got a slight habit of falling off. So, MotoGP, the result was amazing. The race I thought was okay. Finn, I would have given it probably 2 stars out of 5. The result I would give 5 out of 5 for. 2.5. I think 2.5 is a good. Yeah, let's go for 2.5 out of 5. The result was unbelievable. What else has been on? Well, there was Le Mans cars in Portugal. I didn't see much of that because I was I skiing? I can't remember now. I think I was skiing. Toyota 1-2 again. So not much to comment about that. There was the Long Beach IMSA race. That was really good, actually. That went down to the last lap. So that was quite exciting. Now, Joe, you've got Sky F1.
Yeah.
Have you been watching? Well, you probably haven't. I strongly recommend that you watch the IndyCars.
Righto. Why?
Because I watched the highlights on YouTube of the IndyCar race. Long Beach racing is amazing in IndyCars.
Why should I watch it? The racing quality.
the racing is superb. So yeah, you ought to watch that. Last weekend, the main thing was World Superbikes. That was from Assen in Holland. Alvaro Bautista did the hat trick. He won all three races. There was an horrendous crash for a chap called Vandermark. He badly broke his leg, and they actually showed it. They showed the replay. They shouldn't have, because it was quite unpleasant, actually. But you know, let's hope he sort of makes a speedy recovery from that. Other news: Marc Marquez won't be racing at Jerez this weekend. It's the Spanish Grand Prix Jerez. Marquez, his injury from the first race still hasn't healed itself, so he's out, unfortunately. This weekend, of course, MotoGP, Formula One from Baku, and we've got the WEC, the 6 hours of Spa, which I've mentioned already, I'm going to tomorrow. So that should be really good.
Oh, cricket, sir. You might be interested in this.
What's that?
I'm playing tomorrow. We're going up for the, I think it's the National Cup or National Vars. We're going up to, we're in the second round.
You're pretty much going up to Winchester.
Going up to Winchester College.
Really? Well, that'd be nice.
It's going to be quite Winchester a College, tough game.
That's one of the top mm-hmm. schools in the country, Winchester College.
It's going to be quite that'd a tough game, I think. But I think it's going to be rained off. So I'm not so sure about
tomorrow,
that.
Tomorrow, the forecast isn't too bad, is it?
In Winchester, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah.
But, and then I had games on Saturday and Sunday, and they've both been cancelled.
Oh.
Because of the weather and the pitch.
It hasn't been a great start to the summer. I'll tell you what, the ski season, I mean, it's non-stop snowing out there.
What, still?
Yeah, it's just non-stop. My last day skiing on Tuesday morning, we had fresh powder. It was one of the best mornings I've ever had, actually. It was amazing. So, that was really good. Yeah. So, Tom, what have you been up to? Oh, you're eating at the moment. We've got to answer that.
I've been busy.
You got an award.
We did.
Ted Kravitz. Ted Kravitz as well.
Oh, yeah. Hold that's on. Relevant. I forgot about that.
Right, explain this, Tom.
We were up for best sports coverage for TV from a student-based organization.
Would this have been your cricket coverage, or
it was the coverage of the basketball,
right?
That we do every week for BBC Sport and Basketball England from Southampton, and we went up for an award for it, and Ted Kravitz was the judge, and we won.
That's amazing! Wow.
So that was cool. It was nice to win. I've been busy. Not so many events recently. It's been quite a lot of admin planning for the summer. I mean, at the minute we're kind of phasing out the Premier League season. We've got a bit of FA Cup kicking around. We've got a little bit, excuse the pun. We've got
kicking around
another game in a couple of weeks. Oh, there you go.
I missed that bit. Sorry, what was that?
I said there's a bit of FA Cup still kicking around, but I realised that was a good pun. And then the cricket season's just picking up, so we've done two games for the Aegeus Bowl already. But obviously that's only just getting going, really. And then what else we got going on? All the festivals are about to start, so lots of that sort of stuff happening. That's kind of where we're at. Lots of planning and admin, really. A bit of theatre is around. I don't know if you know, but I went out to Qatar to do the World Cup. So that's quite exciting.
I heard that. I knew you were out there before the World Cup. Were you actually out there whilst it was on?
No, I came back the week before the first game. So I went out there and did all the setup and the training.
So to tell me who you were training and what you were training them in.
So I was training the vision mixers. So they are if you think about like a sound engineer mixes audio on a mixing desk, that for cameras. So they mix all the different cameras together. So they obviously have like 20, 30 different cameras and they pick one for you to see at home. So the people are actually pressing those buttons. And then I did some training for the directors as well, because what I was out there to do is train the people on the vision mixer. So if the director doesn't know what the vision mixer is capable of, they can't really use it to its full ability. So a bit of training for the directors to explain them what they can do, because the bit of kit they were using was a bit revolutionary, had a few new features on it they couldn't have possibly done before. So it allowed them to kind of expand their creative mindset on what they could and couldn't do, mainly could do now. And then, yeah, the vision mixer on how to make it work. And then also the engineers on supporting that vision mixer, because obviously they needed to, if something went wrong with it, understand how it worked and fix it. So, yeah, all this literally arrived. It was all in boxes, got it to a stage where it was set up, and then trained the relevant people there who all worked for Alcas, which is basically Qatar's version of Sky Sports.
Mm. Is it unusual for a student to be teaching these professionals?
Yeah, I think I was lucky in many ways that I'd been already trained up on this piece of kit that not many people really knew how to use. And they're kind of, unfortunately, their head of training was a lady, and she felt uncomfortable going out to Qatar. So they were looking around for someone who'd be up for doing it. And yeah, that's why I went out. And I think Chris is here now.
I think he is.
Hello.
We've got vision.
Can you hear us, Chris?
I can indeed. How's it going?
Hooray. Hi. Yeah, good, thanks. This is everyone. I don't know. Joe's just disappeared. I think he'll be back in a minute. But Finn's there. I don't know if it's arranged in the same layout that I've got, but Finn's in my top right hand corner. And then Nick as well at the top left. He's got the pit stop thing under his box, but he's actually called Nick.
How's it going, guys? Nice to meet you.
Oh, and there's Joe in my screen. And now he's going to disappear up to his screen. But yeah. So yeah, this is Chris. I thought, so I don't totally get wrong what you do, Chris, and just kind of not introduce you at all well, I'd get you to introduce yourself if that's all right with you.
Yeah, of course.
Before they start chatting to you, and they might also then have a better idea of what you exactly do and stuff. There's Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hello.
So yeah, I guess when you're ready, if you want to.
Sure. So I'm Chris. I joined Team Brit about 20 months ago, something like that now. I got in touch with the team pretty much about 6 months after we'd done our first lockdown, because I'd not done any kind of sim racing for a long time, and I went and bought some quite expensive kit, and then realized that I couldn't really use my legs well enough to be able to stop the car, and it was giving me a lot of pain. And I had hand controls in my road car at the time, so I kind of started getting on the internet and trying to see if there were, you know, hand controls for sim racing. And I pretty much came across Team Brit purely by looking at a video of their Aston Martin being driven with hand controls. And they weren't even driving it, they were just operating it in the pit garage. And I was just like amazed by the fact that you could keep your hands on the wheel and gas and brake and change gear just all with one thing, you know, because I had a push pull in my car. So push pull is when you've got, you know, one hand on the steering wheel with like a yoke, which funnily enough, I've got right here. So you have a thing like that, and then you've got like a handle that you push towards you for braking, and you pull towards you for throttle. And as much as I tried, you couldn't really drive that spirited with it. It wasn't that safe or effective. And I saw on Team Brit's website, they had a picture of my current steering wheel, or not my current steering wheel, my old steering wheel, which is like a Formula Rim. And they just said, you know, there you go, have a go with this. And it was basically had the advanced paddle module on the back, and they just had like the standard clutch paddle, which I've got over there, which was literally about that big, that allowed you to brake and steer with it. And they kind of chucked me on their simulator at Le Mans for, I don't know, best part of an hour. And I mean, I'm kind of skipping bits. They invited me to come down to the workshop. And, you know, that was amazing, going to a real race team and, you know, going into the workshop and they're being an Aston Martin, kind of still smelling from the race just literally the weekend before or something. It was just nuts. anyway, I kind of got on better with the hand controls than I thought. And I long chat with the lead engineer, Al. And I didn't know a huge amount about Team Brit at that point. So Team Brit is an entire racing team made up of disabled drivers. So we're not a charity. We're just like any other race team. So we're like, you know, like Balfour, a WRT, you know, we're just a race team. We just happen to be a bunch of drivers with different disabilities. And Al had said to me, here's a big fat shopping list of things that you need to buy to, you know, fix your wheel. And I looked at it and I nearly passed out because it was a fortune. I'll be honest, I was a bit disheartened when I looked at it because I'd already spent a huge amount of money on the sim. And I kind of just shelved the idea for, well, months, to be honest with you, because we had another lockdown. I did another load of teaching over winter. And I think we got to like February, March time. And a little email popped up in my inbox from Team Brit basically saying, we're starting our race academy again in the summer. Do you fancy coming and having a go with hand controls, you know, the hand controls they've got in their cars, you know, on a track with a coach? And I was like, hell yes. Just onto being stuck indoors again. You know, saved a bit of cash, so just went and did it. The day itself was amazing, you know, getting in the car and going around the track was pretty terrifying, to be honest with you. Like the first time Jamie Falvey took me around, I was like, seriously, are we going to drive that hard around the track? You know, all four wheels screeching, leaving it late to braking. It was a bit scary. And anyway, the day kind of went well. I listened to what I was told to do. I didn't crash the car. And after that, I sort of got invited to go down to Dunsfold, which is where the team is. So that's where the Top Gear track is. And they were doing a media day there. They had their 118 race car, which was like their rookie car back then. And they sort of said to me, do you want to have a go in that? I was like, yeah, you don't have to ask me twice. And I did, I don't know, I probably did about four or five laps, not really much time at all. You know, did a few laps with the race instructor, went out with one of the other drivers, funny enough. And after that day, I got a message pinging in my inbox saying, you know, we'd like to invite you to be a rookie with Team Brit. You know, how do you fancy going racing? Which was a daunting question because racing, as you probably realize, is a massively expensive sport. You know, nothing's free. Yeah. It's like walking into a room and setting fire to a bunch of £20 notes. That's how I was described racing.
I've got a question, if I can butt in for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
If you haven't finished with your story.
Mate, I could talk for hours, so do butt in.
I'd just be interested, what is the best part and what is the worst part about the job?
Best part of the job, get to travel to beautiful parts of the country. Racing tracks are in amazing places. Get to work with a really cool bunch of people, which is the team. We laugh a hell of a lot over the weekend. Getting to sit on the tail of a GT3 car, or like a, you know, like a prototype, or when we were in Portugal, I had a early 2000s Ferrari 550 Pro Drive with a V12, like, you know, 6 foot flying past me. That was pretty special. Those are the best bits of it, really. There's too many to list. Worst bits, money. Just money, just kind of, how am I gonna get money for next year, you know, and beyond? That's always the constant stress. And I think if you talk to most drivers, they'll probably say the same question, apart from that very small selective drivers that are simply so good they get paid to drive.
Right. I was imagining that the positives would outweigh the negatives.
Oh god yeah
Chris, could you tell us what series you're racing in at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm racing in the British Endurance Championship. So our race series is made up of, I think it's five classes. So we've got Class A, which is GT3. Class B, which is like challenge cars, Super Trofeo cars. Class C is like cup cars, so a lot of 911 cups. Class D, which is what we're in, which is GT4 cars. And then you've got Class E, which is TCR cars. So TCR cars are like front, you know, entirely front wheel drive hatchbacks, like Golfs, Coopers, that sort of thing. And then there's another class below that, which is class F, and I'm struggling to remember what cars are in that actually. But it's proper endurance racing, so it's multi-class racing. So, you know, we'll be at tracks and you'll be overtaken quite a few times by GT3 cars, but you'll also be doing the overtaking on the slower cars. So you're kind of, you're always on your toes. You're always looking in your mirror. You're always having to fight for corners. And Team Brit, you know, we want to compete in the Le Mans 24 Hour, which is multi-class racing with LMP cars, well, hypercars now. And all that training is really important. Our races are anywhere between 2 and 3 hours long. So we do stints behind the wheel. So we'll either do like a 45-minute stint or an hour stint. And then we'll change over, maybe fuel the car, maybe put tyres on. You know, it depends on the strategy, I guess.
Right, well, we have a question that we ask every guest we have.
Yeah.
I say every guest we have. We've only, I'd say maximum, we've only had about six. Yeah, yeah. we've had a few. Sorry. What is the first race you've ever been to? And I suppose for you, this is going to be quite a recent one. What is the most recent or the last race you've been to?
So the first race I ever went to was probably when I was a kid, and it was at Brands Hatch. And I had a family friend whose dad worked for Mobil Oil. And we went up to one of the boxes there and we watched the British GT Championship in like 1994, that sort of time. So we were watching Ferrari F40s. I can't remember if the McLaren F1 was out that year or whether it was the year after, but we definitely saw the McLaren F1 racing there. To be honest, that was cool, but the big lasting impression was watching the Volkswagen Ventos. That was the best race of all weekend. I always remember because it was like touring car racing, you know, cheap as chips. Everyone's banging doors. Everyone's got the same power car, so it's just down to the driver and, you know, the setup that the crew do. That was peak racing for me. Mm. And funny enough, the most recent race I went to was Brands Hatch. So we did the 2 hour Brands Hatch Indy, and that was on Saturday.
How did that go, Chris?
I've never been so disappointed to come away with a podium. That's
okay.
So we led our class for the first hour and a half of the race. And after the first pit stop, we're still leading. And when we had a safety car, we decided to box, which is pretty standard practice in endurance racing because safety car comes out, you go, right, let's box because we're going to lose less time on track if everyone's going slower. So you don't lose track position so quickly. Well, we pretty much timed it perfectly. We were a tiny bit over on our pit stop. We were like 3 seconds over. And by the time I got to the pit lane, I watched the lights go from green to red and watched the safety car go round with the train of cars. So I had to wait a whole lap and we went first to second. And then the car that had come into the pits a lap after me, well, they didn't lose any time. So they caught up the lap that they were behind us.
Yeah.
And the guy that was driving that was a pro driver called Stuart Hall. He used to be an Aston Martin Works driver.
Yeah.
You know, I've been racing for like 2 years. This guy's been racing for 20 years. I'm not ashamed to say that he was quicker than me. and he eventually caught me up. So we went from first to second in a heartbeat and then like, you know, less than 10 minutes later down to third. And that's where we stayed and finished. We finished sixth overall in the race. But we were second overall in the race for ages and ages. I thought we were going to come away with a class win and an overall podium. And that's kind of my goal this season is to come away with overall podiums as much as we can, but win our championship. But we got stiff competition, which is not a bad thing.
And what about your sort of future ambitions, Chris? I understand that, am I right in saying that Team Brit have got a team in the British GT Championship as well, haven't they?
Yeah.
So are you looking ahead at graduating to the GT4 category in British GT?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd love to jump straight into a GT3 car next year, to be honest with you. But there's There's a lot of things that need to happen before that, basically. My goal is 100% British GT next year. If not British GT, maybe European GT4. But we haven't really decided what we're doing as a team yet. But yeah, long term, yeah, I want to be one of the guys that sits in a GT3 car at the Le Mans 24 Hour. So, you know, the quicker that I can get in a GT3 car, the more realistic that that's going to happen.
Yes, because of course, next year, the WEC, they're getting rid of the GT, the current GT class, and they're bringing the GT3 cars, right, aren't they? So,
yeah, that's right. Fantastic. So, by us competing in British GT last year and competing this year, we're actually eligible to apply to go to London.
Right.
So from 2024, hopefully, as long as we've got a GT3 car next year and someone racing in it, we can actually apply. It's still not easy to get into Le Mans. You know, you have to be invited. There are certain championships that you can compete in. And then if you win, you get automatic entry into it. So we want to earn our way into Le Mans by merit. We don't want a garage 56 entry. We want to get that by doing what we're doing. So I think that's a much stronger message, you know, to the disabled community and to able-bodied people, what people with disabilities can do.
Yeah.
If you could, you started racing 2 years ago, you said, yeah. If you could give yourself some advice to yourself, if that makes sense, 2 years ago, what would that be?
Oh God, find sponsors.
I'll give you some time to think about that one. That's quite difficult. Yeah,
definitely, 100%. Find sponsors much earlier. Get talking to people much earlier. Like I said to you earlier, it's the money is how you go racing. So the earlier that you can get all of these things kind of tied up, the more you can just focus on getting in the car and driving. That would literally be it. It's a really boring, dull answer, but that's 100%.
Right, I've got lots and lots of questions. You're clearly a sort of motorsport enthusiast. What motorsport series do you follow the most?
Reliably, probably the World Endurance Championship. I watch Excellent. That one more than any other series. It's great putting it on the weekend because, you know, it's a 6 hour race or it's a 4 hour race or it's a 12 hour race. And I generally have it always on, you know, have the look.
Chris, I'm actually going to Spa this weekend.
Oh, cool.
For the 6 hours. Hours.
Nice.
Yes, I'm going early Friday morning. So, the WEC is my favorite as well.
I started going to the Le Mans 24 Hours in 2010, and I went every year for 10 years. And it was the only reason I went was because I moved down to Southampton. I can go off on whatever you want, but I had a career in London as a photographer. I was assisting. I was doing really well, actually. And I started to get really big issues with my back. And I went and saw a chiropractor all the time. And then the chiropractor said, your back is screwed. But the reason your back is screwed is there's something going on with your pelvis. Go and see an orthopedic surgeon. And then it was going to see the orthopedic surgeon that the surgeon said, okay, wow, you better sit down. And showed me an x-ray of my hip. And my left hip had grown 90 degrees out of the socket. So there was virtually nothing holding my left leg in other than the muscle. And it showed me my right hip, and my right hip was also outside of the socket, but, you know, about 50% in. So he said straight away, right, you know, no sports for you, no running, no climbing up ladders, no jumping, you know, ever again, basically. And I was quite a physical person, quite a sporting person, so that was quite a difficult thing for me to do. So I pretty much ignored him. And just kind of got on with my life. And literally about 6 months later, I was walking to the train station in Kingston to go up to a shoot with the Observer, and my left hip fully dislocated. That was really painful, really traumatizing. You know, I obviously didn't go into work. Spoke to my surgeon and he was like, ooh, kind of hoping that wasn't going to happen for a few more years, but let's get you in. So that was like late 2006, I think that was. And then 2007, I think I did my last job, which was at Downing Street, shot the Prime Minister, really cool day. And then a week later, I was in intensive care, having had my femur broken and my hip put back into the socket and reinforced with loads of titanium. That surgery sort of worked until I had a fall at home and I tore my ACL, and then it kind of just all went to hell after that because I couldn't weight bear. My left leg at, you know, dystrophied till the point where it was like skinnier than my arm. And then it got so bad that I couldn't actually use the legs. I had to literally lift it up to move it around. And that took, that was about 2.5 years of my life, basically in bed, you know, waiting for surgeries to kind of have it corrected, waiting for my knee to be repaired. And that's when I came to Solent University because I needed a job. I wanted to do something with my life because I kind of hit rock bottom, and Solent actually kind of saved my life because it gave me a renewed purpose. They were really accommodating with my condition and have been ever since. And since I started working at the university, I was on a crutch for ages, and I was on a walking stick, then a different walking stick, and then a different walking stick. And then, 2.5 years ago, things started to get bad again. So my hips are really bad at the moment. So they gave me a wheelchair. So, you know, you probably see me around the university sometimes in a wheelchair. I try not to use it too much because the more I use it, the less my muscles are, the less muscles I have, the more my hips aren't held in. So I kind of tend to use it a lot at the racetrack because there's a lot of hanging around and a lot of just going backs and forwards. And yeah, I was stuck in a wheelchair for a long time, and it took a lot to get up and learn to walk again and learn to use my leg again. And I don't want to get back to that place out of choice. So for me, it's quite a nice place to be able to choose to use the wheelchair when I need to and not kind of have to rely on it. But anyway, there's a reason why I was saying I went to Le Mans. So I came to Southampton and I moved to a lovely little house in Hillhead, and I noticed that my neighbor had a copy of Evo and he had an Aston Martin in his driveway. So we got off like a house on fire within minutes. You know, had quite a few beers in the pub that was down the road, the Osborne View, and then he said to me, do you fancy coming to Le Mans 24 hours? And I was like, I've only wanted to go to the Le Mans 24 hours since I was about 10 years old, but my dad would never let me. And yeah, the rest is history. Just went every year ever since. So yeah, that's where endurance racing, the passion for that kind of came from.
Are you going to this year's race, Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
You are? Because that's the 100th anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I know. I'm really excited. There's about 30 of us going. We've got a pitch, a campsite inside Tetra Rouge, which is where we always go.
All right.
So yeah, I don't know if you know the track very well, but there's a stadium, and literally on the inside of Tetra Rouge is a tiny little campsite, and that's where we are.
Yes, yeah, I know it. Yeah,
wow. So I'm super excited about that.
Fantastic. Are there any other? I mean, do you watch Formula One at all?
I go in and out of watching Formula One, truthfully. Mm. I feel like I should be watching it more, but I don't know. For me, I love watching British touring car racing. I love watching Porsche Super Cup. I love watching the Australian Fiat Supercars. You know, I don't know what it is, because you'd find it ironic, really, because World Endurance Championship is a slog. It's an endurance race, but I just find Formula One just a bit samey sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, at least World Endurance Championship, you've got different design of cars every year. You've got different engine configurations, different manufacturers.
And just with these multi-class races, there's always something going on. Even if it's like a Toyota 1-2 at the front, you've got the battles amongst the LMP2s, the GTEMs, and so on. There's always something going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I think Finn has got a whole series. Finn, you've got about 4 or 5.
He's like...
Now, Chris, I don't want you to think about these answers too much. So the first thing that comes into your head.
Okay.
Finn, have you got them? Finn, have you got them? The questions. So just have a look at your inbox. There's... Right, very good. So, Chris, don't give you too much thought. Finn, first question.
Who is your favorite driver?
Who's my favorite racing driver?
Of all time, not just today, but...
Paul Newman.
Paul Newman, right. Oh, right. Well, that's interesting. So he was, we're talking 1979 Le Mans.
Yeah. Paul Newman Le Mans was 79? Obviously a very famous actor, but he was also easily good enough to be a pro driver. And he was just one of the coolest people alive, in my opinion, Paul Newman. The Hawaiian Tropic Porsche 935, that's also up there with one of my favorite all-time cars. So, yeah, Paul Newman.
Oh, okay. Finn, next question.
Which is your favorite race car?
Favorite race car? Well, I think I just answered that. Porsche 935 Cramer from the 1970s.
Your favorite color scheme?
Oh, favorite color scheme? Ooh, that's a really, really, really tough question, actually.
I noticed you got a poster behind you. Oh, sorry. Of a Golf.
Bush. Yeah.
911 there.
That was at Le Mans 24 Hours in 2018. Do you know what? I think it's going to be one of the BMW art cars. There was a 1970s CSL Batmobile that used to race that had patches of multicolours on it. That's probably one of my favourite race cars. Schemes.
Very good.
Your favorite circuit?
Favorite circuit, Brands Hatch.
All right. Excellent. Right.
Love that circuit. I've driven the Indy quite a few times. I've driven the GP circuit once. The GP circuit is amazing.
So you're saying that Brands Hatch is your favorite circuit to race on?
It's my favorite circuit to drive on, but it's actually just my favorite circuit. Like, I love that circuit. It's got a real, it's quite precious to me. From watching it, I love the spectator side of things. You watch a race on the Indy, you can see the entire track. I've been to a lot of different racetracks. Definitely Brands Hatch.
Very good. I think that was the last one, wasn't it, Finn?
Well, if that's the last one, could I jump in? Because I've got a question.
Yeah, of course.
Go for it.
Do you know, this is both singular and as a team as a whole. I suppose it's quite difficult for you to answer for the team as a whole. So you don't necessarily have to. But do you ever stop and think about how much of a role model you are to disabled people all across the world? And then how does that make you feel?
I suppose I don't. Because I'm selfishly just enjoying what I'm doing.
There's nothing, no shame in that.
I don't know. I've met quite a few people. I've met lots of young kids. You know, that's one of the really cool things about what we do is, we'll go to a circuit and I'll meet a kid. Like, I met a kid at Donington in the last round last year who had the exact same hip condition as me. Who'd had multiple had multiple surgeries, which I didn't have when I was a youngster. And I don't know, part of me thought like his parents were looking at me going, Christ, is this what he's got in store ahead of him? But at the same time, I hope he looked at me and what I was doing and kind of going, okay, it's just me, my body is my body, it doesn't really matter what my body is, I can do what I want to do. We had a really fortunate meeting at Alton Park a couple of weeks ago, and we met a Japanese guy. And he was racing with, what's his name? He's a tetraplegic Le Mans driver.
I know who you mean.
Yep. Sosse?
I've forgotten.
Is
it Frederick Sosse, I think?
I think
that's his name, yeah.
So, he partnered him in the Le Mans 24 Hours.
Oh, really?
He came to basically visit Team Brit and look at our hand controls, basically. And we were chatting to a guy who was just, at the event. And the guy I was chatting to was just, after the Japanese guy left and was talking about what we're talking about. He was quite moved, and he did say kind of exactly that, Jay, that he found it very inspirational what he was doing and what we were doing. I wish when I was stuck in bed and thinking like my life is over that I knew about Team Brit. Well, to be fair, Team Brit didn't exist back then. But, you know, I think if I was in that situation now, I would have already phoned up Team Brit and kind of begged them to let me go racing. You know, there's a lot more accessible sports nowadays. There's a lot more disability sports than there ever used to be. I think it's a good time to have a disability because of the amount of support there is out there. And there's a lot of really inspiring people. I feel always inspired by my teammates. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by a very, very cool bunch of people.
Yeah, well, I can just say for someone who isn't a disabled person, I find you very inspiring. So I think it's I can't imagine what an effect you'd have on someone who is. So that's great.
Yeah.
How much of a help was your, Chris, you said you started off doing sim racing.
Yeah.
Finn is very keen on his, you've got quite a good setup there, Finn, haven't you? You've got the sort of the wheel and the pedals and everything. What the leap from being a sim racer to a real racer, how big a leap was that? I mean, was the sim racing really helpful to you, or are they just worlds apart?
It was massively helpful because...
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, and not in the ways that you think it would be helpful. So there are elements of technique that you can learn from sim racing, definitely, that you can apply. But the most beneficial thing I found with sim racing is your vision. So learning where to look for your apex, where you're looking for your braking zones, but also psychology as well. So if you're sim racing against the AI, you're not learning anything. You can just drive around them because they're quite slow, or you can crash into them. But as soon as you go onto an online environment and you're racing against other people, yes, okay, they're going to do things they probably wouldn't do in real life. But when you get to some serious leagues, when you've got damage on and you've got tire wear on, brake fade on, weather conditions, you know, the track evolves as the time goes on, you go offline, you pick up marbles. That's actually really good practice because you can put pressure on people, you can have pressure put on yourself. And when I used to first start sim racing against people online, my heart would literally be pumping like mad if I ever got into the lead. And I would inevitably bottle it because my heart was pumping so fast, and I'd start hyperventilating, I'd make a mistake, and then I'd be like, oh, but I was in the lead. And the more you do it, the more you become comfortable with being around people, and then it starts to become normal. So when I first did my very first race, I got strapped in, I felt like I couldn't breathe for about 5 minutes. But the second I left the pit lane, I just felt really calm. And I don't think I would have felt like that had I not had quite a few years of sim racing experience. You can start to read people's body language in a car. I know you can't see their bodies, but you can see them in a car, of what they're going to do next, whether they're going to go braking deep, or whether they're going to fight you aggressively, or whether they're just going to get out of the way. And all of that you can definitely carry over into real racing.
So if there's any listeners listening, obviously, and want to watch you race or find out about your results, how would they go about doing that?
So there's two ways you can look. So you can either go onto the Team Brit website. So if you just Google Team Brit, there's a fan zone where we've basically got all of our live streams and all of our race results. When we're racing, we're typically racing with BARC, and there's always a YouTube stream live up on the BARC YouTube channel. But what's cool is if you go to the Team Brit YouTube channel, you can actually see the onboards live of us when we're racing. So like if you get on the YouTube now and just go to Team Brit, you should see on the 22nd of April, the 2-hour race that James and I did at Brandt. And you can see me getting frustrated behind the wheel in the pits.
When's your next race, Chris?
The next race is at Alton Park on the 27th of May. So we've got about four or 5 week gap now until the next race. There he goes. So Alton Park is a 3 hour race. I don't know what our race strategy is going to be, whether we'll do double stints. So a double stint will basically be where you do your 45 minutes, you come in, you either fuel the car or you do a dummy stop where you don't do anything. You don't change tires. You just stop because there's a minimum required stops. So if we double stint, that means we're basically doing an hour and a half in the car. One of us will start, one of us will then maybe do the middle part of the race, because it does take longer to do the driver changes. So I don't know. We have to change tires. We have to fuel once. That's the dead certainty, and it's just when we do it. But I'm pretty excited. Alton Park's a pretty cool circuit.
Yeah, excellent. And what's the longest race in the endurance calendar? Is it?
To be honest, they're all 3 hour races. The longest one. We were thinking about entering into the 6 hour race at Donington. Yeah. I'm not sure if we're doing it as a team because it's a non-championship points entry. So we would just be racing for the sake of racing. I'd love to do it, obviously. I just don't know what the team's thinking at the moment.
Yeah.
It's all very expensive. Like set of tires, £2,500.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We go through probably three sets of tires, maybe four sets of tires over a race weekend. So that's 10 grand just on tires. So if you think about a 6 hour race, we're probably going to go through, well, easily probably three or four sets in the race. And then probably a couple of sets in the actual practice and leading up to it, qualifying. So it's not including fuel, not including the race, you know, the wages for the mechanics and the engineers. You've noticed I keep going on about money. The best thing about the racing is the racing itself. I really enjoy the endurance side of it because it's a test of physical ability. It's a test of dexterity and patience more than anything else. I see a lot of people get impatient and bin the car or over rev the engine, blow the gearbox up. It's such an old saying, but you can't win the race in the first corner, but you can definitely lose it. So I like to be patient. I like to look after my tires so that later on in my stint, I've got a better set of tires under me than my competitors. And that worked really well last year in the Brick Car Trophy in the BMW. So hopefully that works this year.
Excellent. Well, we will follow your progress this year with interest, Chris. So,
Thank you.
Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Yeah, as Joe was saying, we've had a number of guests on, but you're the first actual racing driver we've had on. So
I'm honoured. I'm very honoured.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, it's just we're more or less sort of finished here, Chris. But what we normally try and we do our predictions for the weekend ahead. Will you be watching the F1 or the MotoGP? I assume you'll be watching some of the WEC, obviously.
I'll be watching the WEC, definitely.
Excellent.
So Aaron Morgan is coming over on the weekend. So Aaron Morgan drives the McLaren and British GT. He has bought the same steering wheel. He's got the same shifters. He's got the same boss. He's got the same thing. What's that rattling? And we're going to spend all of Saturday, I think, basically building him one of these so that he can join us sim racing. So we as a team, are pretty much sim racing every single night. Like last night, for example, you know, what started off as Bobby Trumley and I doing like an hour of sim racing. Well, the senior race coach, team manager came on. And before I knew it, I was still sim racing at 1:30 in the morning. I was God, I've got to go to bed. it's all good practice. You know, I need to be able to race when I'm tired, and it's just good fun. Yeah.
I suppose you could intersperse your sim racing on Saturday with watching some of the WEC, can't you? Because that's on Saturday.
I mean, I've seen the weather forecast, and for a bank holiday weekend. Sorry, I'm going to hold on to this cat because he keeps making noise. So for the for a bank holiday weekend, I think we're going to have a lot of sunshine on the Saturday. So I think we'll actually probably spend a bit of time in the garden. I'll probably listen to the race on the radio. And I'll just probably have it on generally. What time does it start? Is it like a midday?
What time does it start? It's probably around 12. It might be just after 12, actually.
I went to Spa last year.
Yeah, so did I. I got very wet.
No, I went to watch British GT at Spa, and glorious sunshine for the whole time we were there. So I've got a very lucky quality of Spa.
You're lucky. I'm just hoping that it's not going to be too wet this weekend, but I'm not confident, because even when the forecast says, even when it's forecast to be fair, you just can't guarantee the Ardennes that it's got its own sort of microclimate, and it can be beautifully sunny one second, then chucking down the next. So I've packed my waterproofs.
Very good. Make sure you've got lots of layers. Make sure you've got a hat.
Yeah. Got everything, and we're camping as well, so I think the evening's going to be quite cool.
You're
so
brave, you are.
Yeah, it's a weekend, I think. Anyhow, right, I think that pretty much sort of wraps things up there. Thanks so much for giving up your evening to join us, Chris. It's been really interesting hearing about your racing career and everything.
Yeah, pleasure, absolute pleasure. Really nice to meet you guys. I mean, I know one of you. thanks for introducing me, Tom. If you want me to try and hook you up with some of the other racing drivers from Team Brett, do let me know. Because I'm sure that'd be good to you.
Thank you.
I'll try and talk to some of the big racing drivers that I meet on the circuits, and I'll be like, "Hey, you know who these guys should talk to?"
absolutely.
So if you bump into Max Verstappen, let him know.
I will let him know. I mean, I bumped into Darren Turner quite a few times. Had some good chat.
Really?
Yeah. He came and checked out the hand controls last year, because I raced in the team's Aston. So that, you remember I said at the start, I was looking at the video of the hand controls of the Aston Martin. Well, I raced that Aston Martin in Donington in August, which was still like the most exciting thing I've ever done. 5 liters, 500 horsepower. Oh, no silence. No silencers, so it sounded like a GTE car. It was
fantastic,
whopper. And anyway, Darren came to look at the car and look at all the hand controls. Really nice guy. If I see him, I'll mention it.
Thank you. Right, well, thank you very much for coming on Pit Stop.
Yeah,
it's been great speaking to you. Thank you for sparing the time. I think we've taken up a bit too much of your time.
That's cool.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chris.
I need some late dinner. All right, nice to meet you guys. I'll see you.
Okay. See you later.
Bye, Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Cheers.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Okay. Bye. Let's move on to predictions, because it's quite a busy weekend. We've got Formula One from Baku, and we've got MotoGP from Jerez. So, Joe, Formula One. I'll do my usual.
Yeah.
My usual, you know, Verstappen, Perez, Alonso. So that's me done. What about you?
Well, I might switch it up a little bit here, and I'm going to suggest that my prediction, alongside I'm going to predict the podium, my prediction here is that it's quite a heavy straight line circuit, isn't Baku? So, and the Williams, I think, are quite quick in the straight line. So I think Williams might do quite well. I'm not suggesting they're going to get a podium, but I can't imagine they're going to be... I think they might get points. So that's my prediction on the side. But then podium is going to be Verstappen win, let's go Alonso second and a Hamilton third.
Like that.
Let's switch
Finn. We got Finn's back. I think you have some technical issues, Finn. Is your sound working, Finn? Your laptop died. We're doing predictions for the weekend. It's Baku Sunday, Finn. What's your top three for that? So Verstappen first. I think your sound's come back. Perez second. Ocon third. Right, MotoGP. If we go all the way back a couple of weeks now to the race at Cotter, none of us scored anything. In fact, let me just double check that. because I think the previous round in the previous round, I think none of us scored in that one. Can I just double check the predictions? I've got a feeling that none of us scored anything at all.
Excellent.
Let's have a look. Yeah, I've got the predictions here. So did any of us score any points? The answer is no. So none of us, so that including Dave, our guest, Joe, Finn, Ed, and myself, none of us scored. Now, interestingly, I listen to the Crash.net podcast every week, and the three presenters there, now these are professionals. You've got Harry Benjamin, Keith Ewan, former motorbike racer, Pete McLaren, he's the MotoGP editor of Crash.net. They perform the same as us. In fact, in all fairness, Harry Benjamin got Luca Marini to finish in the top three, but that's all they got. So
difficult goes to predict, show then. That
MotoGP now has become, I think, almost impossible to predict.
I mean, very difficult to predict then, because if Crash.net and the professionals got it wrong.
The professionals got it wrong, we got it wrong. It's almost impossible. So you can say almost anything you like. It might sound ridiculous, but it might come true. So, Joe, MotoGP, what do you got for that?
Jack Miller, third.
To win.
No. Jack Miller, third. Mark Marquez, second.
Is he not racing yet?
Ah, okay. I'm going to go Rins second, and Binder first.
Now, I would say those predictions are unlikely, but it's not the case this year.
I'm just going to say, I think what's going on here to a degree is I think some people have got the settings set to having headphones in, and then don't, and the noise cancellation isn't activated because of it. I think there's sort of other issue at Finn's end, but I think that's definitely why we're getting an echo down Joe's line.
Because I can hear myself, it's a bit weird. So I think, Finn, if you put your predictions on the, if you just, you know, do it through social media, you know, whatever it's called, WhatsApp, whatever it's called, just send me your predictions, because we can't hear you, basically. Yeah, he's giving me the thumbs up there. My predictions, I haven't thought about these at all. I'm going to go Bagnaia to win, although you've got a slight habit of falling off. Bagnaia 1, I'm going to go Quartararo 2, and I'm going to go Miller 3 as well, actually. But who knows, we'll probably score nothing again this weekend. So I think we'll wrap it up there. So next week, you're going to ask me, Joe, questions about going to Spa.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy that.
Yeah, good. So I think lots of questions you can ask me about the whole experience of traveling to Spa and the race.
How wet did you get?
Absolutely. And you got the short straw. You're going to have to watch the Grand Prix for us. I ain't going to watch any of it. And tell us all about it next week.
The special guest was Chris Overend from Team Brit.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Pit Stop with Mr. Bird. There's a few new things I want to make you aware of. We've got a new website, which you can find by going online to shows.acast.com/pitstop, where you can also find links to our Twitter and on the About page, more information about the hosts as well. We're also on lots more platforms in addition to where you're listening to us now. So we're now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music and lots more, as well as TuneIn, like we've been on since we started. So head over to those platforms to subscribe on the most convenient one for you and find all our back catalogue of episodes to listen to again as well.